The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.
Good morning. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, California, streaming online at kuci.org and podcasting on iTunes. Welcome to Fighting for Love. This show will help you turn conflict into collaboration in all your relationships. I'm Lloyd, the show's engineer, and your host is Mari Frank, an attorney mediator since 1985. She's a mediator for the Orange County Superior Court Civil Mediation Panel. Mari's a professor of negotiations and conflict management and has been a certified state bar trainer for over 25 years. To learn more about the show and our great guests, please visit conflicthealing.com. Mari, what's your show about this morning?
Well, our show today is really about dying, but it's an uplifting show. I don't want people to turn off or get upset about it. But none of us are going to get out of here alive, right? I mean, the reality is each and every one of us will go through the dying process. We will pass to the other side. And then whatever you think will be on the other side will be part of your faith or whatever you've experienced. I happen to believe that there is something more, and that when I get to the other side, I will hopefully be able to communicate with my loved ones in one way or another. But that dying process, it is a process. And I went through it with my mother, and I went through it with my sister. And so it can be a beautiful process. And we're going to talk about this with our wonderful guest, Charles Garfield, PhD, and he has written this book that I've been reading. It's a beautiful book called Life's Last Gift, Giving and Receiving Peace When a Loved One is Dying. And I've really related to this book and really love this book, and we're going to find out more about it. But first, let me tell you a little bit more about Charles. Charles Garfield, PhD, is a psychologist, author, and founder of the Shanti Project, a widely acclaimed AIDS and cancer service organization. He was a clinical professor of psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of California of Medicine at San Francisco for nearly four decades. And he was a fellow of the American Psychological Association. Currently, he is a research scholar at the Star King School for the Ministry at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. You can find out more about him at charlesgarfield.com. So I'm excited to talk about this beautiful book. Thank you, Charles, for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation.
Charles, talk to us about what drove you to write this book.
Well, for the last 43 years, I've spent time in a variety of places at the bedsides of people who are dying. I was on the faculty of a large medical school, and that's where a lot of the work happened. And what I noticed is that we have so few user-friendly resources to guide us through one of the most challenging times in our lives. There are more books out there on how to play golf and how to fix your car than there are on how to care for people we love during their most challenging occasions. So I decided to write the book I always wished that I could hand to family members and friends and health professionals so that they'd know what to do at this very challenging moment.
Yes, it's so important, because all of us will go through this. If we have a person who's ill and they're dying, it's a different it's a different experience if someone dies in a car accident. But when you have the wonderful opportunity to be there with someone as they're passing, or at least in the dying stage. I know when my mother died, I was with her, almost 24/7. And then, interestingly enough, I left to go home to my kids at night and said, I'll see you in the morning. And I came back, and I got a call as soon as I left that she had passed. So that was interesting. But I was holding my sister's hand as she passed and reading spiritual things and doing a lot of the things that you talk about doing, which is, you know, kind of doing a life review and talking about fun times. Even if they were in a coma, I knew that they could hear me. So I really enjoy your book and know how beautiful it is. But let's talk a little bit so my audience knows from you. When a person is dying, the impulse of many loved ones is to try and do something for them. You know, what can I do? What can I do? Can you please explain simply why simply just being present and open is really the most important thing that a loved one can do?
Well, it's understandable why we want to do something. We wish we could change things. We wish we could make it better. But in fact, the single most powerful thing we can do is to show up, pay attention, and really care deeply. You know, 70 to 90% of the information we send to one another is sent nonverbally. It's not the words. It's the fact that we're there and how we seem and that we're actually present to the other person. And when they know that we really want to be with them, that fact alone is the most nurturing thing we can do.
Beautiful, right. When we're sitting with our loved one when they're dying, it's important to listen from our heart, and you list an exercise that helps us to do this. Can you talk about that exercise?
Well, you know, the exercise really boils down to listening as if the other person was the focus of a meditation. Sometimes when we listen, we're thinking of other things. We're thinking of where we're going to go next, or we're thinking about who we're going to see, or whether the current conversation is interesting to us. But if we learn how to really focus, the way people focus in meditation, if you're familiar with that, then we actually develop a contact with the dying person that they experience as very supportive. Listening from the heart is the single most important thing we can do. If we do no other thing, really listening intently to the other person.
Right. I know I didn't have that opportunity with my sister because when I got to her, she was already in a coma, and it took her, you know, for I think it was like 18 days before she actually passed. I talked to her. I held her hand. We kept hoping and talking about things that we hoped that she would get better. And then with my mother, she had a stroke. She could hear me, but she couldn't talk. So I didn't have that luxury of being able to really listen to anything that they were saying. So I kind of missed out on that part of it. But,
Then we go on to the next thing. You know, you go, if you can't listen because the other person is not able to talk, then speaking from the heart becomes very important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's saying the kind of I love yous that you wished you had said for a lifetime, that you hope you said for a lifetime, but this may be the last occasion. You never know when you, it's like when you left your mother's bedside and went home, and that's when she died. That's what happened with my mother as well, exactly the same situation. And I every time I left my mother's bedside, or my father's when I took care of him, or my best friend when I took care of him, in each of those occasions, I was aware that when I left, I might never see them again. And so I made it very, very clear to them how much I loved them, how much I valued the relationship, and what a special person they were to me.
Yes. Yes, because we knew that death was imminent. And it is a process, which I learned about because my mother was in hospice. So that was the beauty of having hospice to explain everything to me and give me some, you know, things to say and help me to understand what she was going through. But I remember speaking from the heart. And you may know of Daniel Brinkley. Do you know him? Have you read any of his? He wrote several books. He actually died several times from being electrocuted by a storm, a lightning storm. And he went to the other side. I mean, he was a bad guy, he says. And before this happened to him, he was a sniper in Vietnam. And then he came back and this happened to him. And he ended up just changing his whole life by going to the other side and then coming back and learning compassion. And then he has a whole, a string of hospices all over the South. And he's written several books about, you know, Saved by the Light and things like that, Danyon Brinkley. And that, it was fascinating, those books to read, because he talks about doing a life review. He talks, like you do, you know, about really speaking from the heart and helping people to know that, help them to the other side where he had been.
Yeah, you know, now that you mention it, I am familiar with those works. And you know, people who have near-death experiences come back.
Right.
And one of the things that they'll say, and you mentioned it beautifully just a moment ago, is that they come back feeling the desire to express compassion in their lives.
Right.
And one of the things, that, one of the great gifts we can give, and I wrote about this a lot in Life's Last Gift, is how to express that compassion. Sometimes it's very small things. It doesn't have to be some major thing. It's just knowing how to give somebody the perfect present. And it might be a little thing. I always remember with my mother that every time I came to her, visit her, she was in hospice also, I came with some ice cream because there was a particular kind of ice cream that she loved. And she was so happy when I showed up with that ice cream. Sometimes it wasn't clear whether she was happier to see me or the ice cream.
Right, right.
But a little thing, little things like that can mean an enormous amount.
Well, because you really cared enough to give her something that she wanted.
Yes.
You know, which was more important than bringing flowers. Ice cream would be a lot more fun than flowers.
Especially since I know she wanted it.
Right, right. Now, even in the face of terminal diagnosis, hope and positivity have a place. I have a friend who just 2 weeks ago lost her younger brother. And she, you know, she was out here in California and he was in Michigan. And I kept saying, gee, you know, I think this, because he went into hospice and they said, well, he could live 6 months. So she said, well, I have time. I'll go there in May. And I said, you know, I just know for me, I would want to go now, just because he's feeling a little better now, and maybe you should consider that. I didn't want to push it. She goes, oh, no, I'm praying every day. I know there's going to be a miracle. I talk to him every day. I have hope. I believe in it, and I am going to keep praying, and I know it's going to happen. So, unfortunately, he died like a week later, and she wasn't there, and I did not want to have her feel guilty or anything. But, you know, When does hope and positivity have a place, and how do we deal with that when have terminal illness, like the doctors say, you know, you're going to go soon?
Well, the interesting thing about hope is that what people are hopeful for changes over time. Initially, people may be hopeful that they'll survive, and their loved ones may hope that they'll survive, which is the story you were telling. But when survival clearly isn't going to happen, when people really are in their dying time, what people are hopeful for changes. For instance, my father was really hopeful that he would get home to die. He wanted to be in his own home, in his own bed, and he was really hopeful that the medical people could help him do that. And it came to pass. We were able to do that for him. He was much happier in his own surroundings than he ever was in a healthcare institution. So what people are hopeful for, sometimes people are hopeful that somebody will show up and help them review their lives,
right.
Do a life review with them, listen to their stories, make memories with them. What people are hopeful for changes over time, and it may get smaller and smaller, but it's still very critical to them. Hope doesn't die until the very end.
Right. What's interesting is with my friend, her sister was taking care of this younger brother, and he wanted to go to the lake, which was his very favorite place, which was about an hour away. So that was something he really wanted to do, and they took him to the lake, and he had a good day. He even ate. He was happy. There were people around that surrounded him. It happened to have been like 40 degrees instead of 40 below in Michigan.
Right.
And so he had a wonderful day, and then he came home, and then as they were helping him into the house, he slumped and died. So he was hopeful to get to that place. It reminds me of what you were just saying, to get home to die. He wanted to get back and at least see that before he died. And then that was his joy, as he was hopeful to be able to get there and wait until he could get there and then pass.
And the only way you'll know that he really wanted that, if you're with somebody who wants something very specific like that, is to ask. Is there anything we can do for you that'll make you particularly happy?
Mm.
Is there a place you want to go to? Is there a meal that you wish to eat? Is there a person you want to see? You have to know the art of asking questions. It's not about having the answers.
Right.
It's about asking questions.
Mm. So how do you counsel people who are coming to their loved ones with a history of maybe anger, or maybe they, you know, weren't talking, or they felt mistreated or resentment? What do you do about that so that they don't carry that forever?
Well, in those situations, and there are many of them, I always say that the single most important thing that's happening now is that this person who you're connected to is in their last days, and rather than regret not being there for them, why not put the old baggage aside just for a moment? I'm not asking you to forget it. I'm not asking you to forgive it. I'm just simply saying that there's something very important going on right now, the death of somebody who you're connected to, who at least in some ways you care about. And let's put the old baggage aside just for a moment, just while you're here, and see if you can provide them with some contact, some affection, some love, some caring that may be useful to them during a really challenging period. Most people understand that. I don't ask people to forgive things that are not forgivable. What I do say is you can put it aside just for a moment.
Right. You know, when my sister and her husband had gone on vacation for their anniversary and their teenage son was left behind, and he kind of had a fight with my sister, you know, typical mom-son fight, before he left, and he didn't say goodbye. And then she got a spider bite in Florida and ended up getting very, very sick and then getting septicemia, and she was in a coma. And we all flew out there, and he flew out there. And he was feeling terrible about the fact that, you know, he couldn't talk to her. She couldn't hear him, he didn't think. You know, and I said, she can hear you. She can hear you. You tell her how you're feeling. Tell her you're sorry. Tell her you didn't mean to talk like that. You love her and all that stuff. And so that was something that he went through. But he, you know, that's, I think, if you've had some rift between yourself and someone who's dying, it's a good idea to ask for forgiveness or forgive someone else, because otherwise you carry that junk with you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a wonderful time to ask forgiveness and to give forgiveness.
Yeah, and you know, what I've learned over time being a mediator, an attorney mediator, and people going through anger with each other, is that when you forgive, you don't forgive really for the other person. You forgive for yourself, so you're not chained to all that anger in the past.
Right. Right, you know, it's true that if you can lay down that burden finally and not be consumed by it, that's the best outcome. But if you feel you can't, and I've been with many people who couldn't forgive, and when they told me their stories could be pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I say, okay, I understand that. If that had happened to me, it would be awfully hard to forgive that.
Right.
But let's put the burden down just for an hour, just for the time that you're here.
Yeah.
This is a special occasion. It's different than the rest of life.
Right. And Yeah, and how I feel about forgiveness for people who've done, you know, terrible things, even to me, I give it up. It's not so much that I want to reconcile. I just give up the resentment and the anger. I just give it up because it eats me alive. So, right. You know, it's just, that's the way I perceive it.
That's great that you can do that.
Yeah, well, I just have to talk to myself. It's not always easy. As right. You know, being a psychologist.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, empathy is really a vital component of our relationship when we're with our loved ones who are dying. But it can be really draining and taxing. So tell us how we can keep our empathy strong and sincere without really falling apart ourselves.
Well, a couple of things. One is to understand what empathy really means. It's an imaginative entrance into the world of another person's situation. In other words, it's reversing roles with the other person and asking yourself, if it were me in the bed, what would I want? Mm. How would it be for me? And then to proceed as if that was the case. You can learn a great deal by reversing roles in your own mind, in your own imagination. Now, you asked an interesting question, which was, what if it's draining? What if it's too much? What I always counsel people, and I've been doing this for quite a few years, what I always counsel people about empathy is you can be as empathic as you can possibly be while you're here, while you're in the room with the person. But when you leave, you have to let that burden go.
Mm.
Live the rest of your life. Do something special for yourself. Recognize that this is not ordinary daily life. This is a very challenging period. And do something special for yourself, something that you like, something that nurtures you. There's a lot that's being written now on self-compassion. And I write about self-compassion in my book, Life's Last Gift. I make sure that people understand that it's absolutely legitimate to take care of yourself as well as taking care of your loved one who's dying.
Yes, because, you know, we are kind of like, I remember being with my mother. At that time, my sister was alive, so she was with me. And I did have my family around when my sister was dying, but it still was an individual process that each of us went through. You know, even though we would talk about things together and how we feel and try and be supportive of each other, we each had our own things that we were experiencing through the dying process.
It's, you know, each relationship is different. I have
right.
a brother, and when my parents were dying, I knew that his connection to my father and my mother was different than my connection.
Right.
That he was going to have to do things his way and to do it the way he wanted, and that I was going to be with my parents in the way that I wanted to be. Each of these relationships is different, and you can't force your assumptions about how it should be on anyone else.
No, and I have a client whose mother was dying last week, and I was, you know, trying to be really, really supportive. And he's kind of this kind of stoic kind of guy, and he actually got up and left where the state that she was in. He's in California and she's in a different state, but he went there. And then he knew she was dying, but he just got up and left and he said, I know she's going to be dying, but she'll be in a better place. So he got up and left and went on a cruise. And, you know, I just thought he couldn't handle it. You know, he couldn't deal with that kind of emotion. But, you know, I wasn't really trying to judge. It isn't something that I could have done, but I think that was his way of doing it. But I just thought it was so, I was curious how people do things differently when they have a loved one dying. How they, some people say, I can't be around that. I can't be around that. What do you say to that?
What I say is that I know it's hard for you, but imagine how hard it is for the person dying.
Yes.
The survivor loses one person. You're going to go home to your life. You're going to go home to your house. You're going
right.
to go home to your friends. The dying person loses everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody and everything. So as hard as it is for you, recognize the fact that it's much harder for them and make that special effort to be there so that you lessen the regrets later on.
Yes, yeah. And you talk about emphasizing to our loved ones when they're dying that we're going to be there with them as far as we can go. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's like walking with somebody across a bridge and you're holding hands. At some point, you're holding hands, you're walking across the bridge. At some point, you have to let go of their hand and they go on. And what you want to let them know is you're going to be there for the duration. I said to my mother and father, I'm going to be with you on this journey as long as you want. I'll be a partner with you for as long as you want me to be there. And they both, of course, said, well, I want you to be there the whole time. And I said, I promise I will be.
Mm.
That they weren't saying be there 24/7. They were saying be a partner with me on this journey. What they were really saying, and this is important, is don't abandon me.
Right.
The single worst thing for me personally, and I think it's true for quite a few other people, is to inadvertently abandon somebody you love, somebody you care about. That abandonment is the single worst thing you can do. So just show up, pay attention, and care. Those three things. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to make it all better. I wish we could, but we can't.
Right.
But we can show up, we can pay attention, and we certainly can care.
Right, right. I know for me, experiencing those experiences with my mom and my sister, my dad died in his sleep, and it was like a heart attack. So it wasn't that long period of dying. It just happened. Do you know what I mean? Like if someone's in an accident. But I just remember that what helped me was my spirituality, because I could pray, I could say, you know, I had read a bunch of books about life after life with Raymond Moody. I had read all this stuff, so I was able to be hopeful about the other side and seeing each other again. Is there really a difference when someone is real spiritual versus someone who doesn't have any kind of faith in an afterlife?
It can be. It can be a real boost when somebody has a strong faith in an afterlife. And when I mean faith, I mean something strong, something that they believe in deeply, a bone deep kind of conviction. It can nurture them throughout the dying process so that it's less difficult for them. They may be less anxious than the person for whom it's all a kind of fade to black. You know, it's all
right.
Over and there's nothing more. My mother, who was very concerned about what happens after you die, went on her dying time, developed a strong conviction that there was something more. She never had it for her whole life, but we worked and discussed it, and I told her stories about different cultures that believed in afterlife, and she got to the point where she actually believed it, and it nurtured her tremendously in her final days.
Right. I really think it did. It helped us as a family, and I could see many things. Like, I know that my mother chose to die when I wasn't there. She didn't want me around. I kept thinking there, you know, that her family came to get her, and I was being there so much, I kind of got in the way. You know, I was diverting her.
Sure.
So that's kind of how I saw it. Well, excuse me. We are just out of time. I just want to just say the name of your book again, Life's Last Gift, Giving and Receiving Peace When a Loved One is Dying, by Charles Garfield, PhD, a psychologist and author, and a very wonderful person that we have just had the opportunity to speak with. So if you want to just give your website, it's time to go.
My website is charlesgarfield.com. That's easy enough. Charlesgarfield, one word, .com. And there's all sorts of good information there.
Yes, and thank you so much for joining us. And I really appreciated this beautiful book that you wrote. And so keep in touch, okay?
Thank you so much. I certainly will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org on the net. I'm Mari Frank. Join us every Monday morning at 8:30 and visit our website at conflicthealing.com. Thanks.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.